proudly sponsored by an orderly boarding process to get you on a flight. You know, the kind of scenario where passengers sit patiently until their boarding group is called, leaving plenty of room around the boarding lanes, and certainly not crowding around in a crazed fashion, jamming things up for everyone and making everyone else worried that there will be no room left and that they don't need to do anything but join the frenzied masses. Yes! Diesel and Clooney is sponsored by that ideal that doesn't occur naturally at airports, but we really wish it would. Here's hoping
ever.
With Diesel and Clooney.
Okay, yeah. Where were you the moment that you were triggered and you were like, no, this is my next intro. This is where I'm, where were you? What airport were you in? What flight were you getting on? Because I've had the same experience. I didn't, however, think this would be a great intro to Diesel and Clooney. Where were you?
I did. I was triggered. I think multiple trips on my last flight.
It's a compilation of every flight ever.
Yeah, I really do. I think it was in Singapore, actually. I think I was in Singapore, flying to Papua New Guinea, and there was just mad panic. Of course, admittedly, some of that panic was justified because that flight ended up being canceled, and their way of telling us was just sort of to wait until way after boarding time as people are panicking. And then some agent runs into the enclosed boarding area. And it's like, the plane's broke, and then ran off. And we're left with no authority and no one to tell us what to do. And so we set up camp. We elected a government, and, you know, several people went out by ourselves and fixed the plane. It was Lord of the Flies, but with a happy ending. The passengers of gate D40 rallied and fixed that plane.
Yes. There are so many layers to that experience, right? Like that experience of just standing there. And I don't know that I've ever been on a flight where I haven't had to ask someone, I'm sorry, were you group four or were you group five? Were you, like, are you in line or are you just standing around like a vulture blocking the rest of group four before they can get on, right?
No, it's exactly it. And I can see both sides. I feel like, because I try to behave,
I try to sit there
and follow the rules. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down till they call my group. But even I, who have made, you know, a forethought to be like, I know what's going to happen, but I will resist. Even I, when I see all the crowds there, I'm like, well, if nobody's following the rules, then I'll do no good by it. And it's happened to me, Jerry.
Doesn't matter.
It has absolutely happened to me where I have sat there. In fact, on this last trip, I don't remember which airport, but somewhere, maybe LA, where I really did. I absolutely sat there and behaved myself until, you know, they just had given up calling group numbers. And so I think I was group five or six or who knows.
And the reality is, we're going to sit on this plane for how many hours, right? Like, we're all in a hurry to get on it and sit down and buckle up. Why not hang back for a minute and just wait and just do that? Just wait until everybody's on. Like, the plane's not going until we're all on it anyway. There's really no rush except for the rush in our head to get on there when we're supposed to.
And the overhead bin space. This is, I think, that's what's done. Let's start one. I'm telling you, it's the overhead bin space because that's so regulated now.
That's fair.
So people,
but if you're group five, six, which I usually am, it doesn't matter anyway. It's either taken up or there's no choice in the matter.
Yeah, you're either gonna make it or you were doomed, and you should just accept that you're doomed. But no, it's very true. And it really is. It's, you know what it is, Jerry? It's a lack of basic understanding and basic social graces. And you know what, Jerry? Speaking of basic.
There it is. Yep.
I got so wrapped up.
I saw that one coming. I could see it. I was like, here it comes. Yes.
Yes, I was pretty proud of myself. Yeah, speaking of basics, Jerry, I think this episode we should go back to basics, back to the basics of the TCK. You know, as we do, we talk a lot about it, but I have come to find A, that not everybody actually knows all the TCK basics, and B, I think they're changing. I think there have been updates. I think people have had strokey beard and scratchy head meetings, and things have grown and changed. So let's go back to basics, the basics of the TCK scene, if you will.
I love that. Yeah. And that's the reality. That's always been the reality, right? Like, anytime you talk about TCKs. You've got a new audience. You've got a new group of people. You've got people who are, and especially people who are going through that experience. Like there's somebody in the room that's saying, oh, good grief. Like if I have to hear one more thing about TCKs, like this is, come on. Right. And there's somebody else in the room that is just having their mind blown. And there's somebody in the room that's saying, wow, that's been my experience. That's who I am. And I've never known it. And you just put into words what I've been feeling my entire life. There's somebody else who maybe like me, a parent of TCKs, who's thinking, wow, this is giving me new insight and understanding into my kid that I've never had before. And I never, ever considered those dynamics, or that they would think this way, that they would process the world and really see the world through these lenses. And it's life changing. So let's get back to the basics.
We should. And you know what, to start with, I think I don't have notes. I'm going to try to do this from memory, but I'm pretty sure I can, because I give this definition a lot. But the definition for a TCK. Let's start with that. And I'm sure there may be different versions of this out there now.
There definitely are different versions.
This is even a slightly dated version, but it's the version I think that I've been going with because it seems all encompassing. So here I go from memory. Mm-hmm. Here I go. A TCK is an individual who, having spent a significant portion of the developmental years in a culture other than their parents' culture, develops a sense of relationship to all of the cultures while not having full ownership of any. Elements from each culture are incorporated into the life experience, but the sense of belonging is often with those who have a similar experience. Mm. All from memory, Jerry. All
wow, from that memory. Was impressive. Yeah.
Thank you. I do. I recite that one a lot because it's good. But there's so much in there, Jerry.
It is good.
There's so much in there. And I do think it's worth going back to the basics, because even if we were to pick that apart, I think that definition, its scope has changed over the years. And and even I often give some imagery to go with that definition, because I think it makes it more understandable. And I think the imagery actually has helped expand sort of who can relate to this concept, because I think more people can probably relate to this now than ever before. And that's worth talking about. Expanding the tent.
Absolutely.
As the great Ruth Van Rieken says, the great RVR often says that we're expanding the tent. And I love that. So. The imagery, I think, Jerry, is that it's kind of like that of a hallway. And if you took your cultural identity and were to picture it as a house, you can have different rooms represent the different cultures that make you who you are. So for me, you know, I've got, even if we just go by documentation, I've got an American room and I've got a British room. If we go by, you know, even longstanding experience, I was based in Belgium longer contiguously than anywhere else. So I've got a Belgian room. And it's not just nationality, there's culture. I worked, I grew up in and then worked for the military. So I've got a military room with its culture. And what it is to be a TCK is not, I think a common assumption is that you just jam all of those things together. So it would mean my cultural identity, if you jammed it all together, would be, you know, a military aircraft sitting in a hangar with a portrait of the king serving Starbucks 24 hours a day with Belgian waffles. And while that would be a fun hangar to visit, what it is to be a TCK is actually that you have to keep those cultures separate for your life to operate. So you end up spending a lot of time in the hallway that connects those different rooms. So I usually use the example of a German family who I know who live in Tokyo, who send their son to an international school. And language is the really obvious indicator of room. But we also always have to bear in mind that language is just the tip of the iceberg, that underneath that is a whole bunch of expectations and values and history and protocol.
Oh, all of it.
But language is just the easy indicator. So even if we just use that as the top of the iceberg, when this German family, when their son wakes up in the morning, he's in the German room of his house and he speaks German with his family at home. He says, Guten Morgen, they have Brötchen, everything is wunderbar. But then he takes the metro to get to school. So he has to step out of the German room and into the Japanese room. And it's not just a language shift. It's a shift in personal space, what considered polite, all sorts of things. And then he gets to the international school, which is in yet another language. But it's more than that. It's also a shift in priorities, a shift in what's considered appropriate, all kinds of stuff. And so in his one day, he has to shift between three different rooms, and they stay distinct for his life to work. Because even if you just use the tip of the iceberg language, if he started speaking German at the international school, the amount of people who understand him is going to drop. If he spoke Japanese at home, his parents would be like, "What are you doing? We're German."
Right.
You know, if
right.
he spoke English in Tokyo, the understanding drops. So what it is to be a TCK is having multiple rooms that you transit between in order to make your existence work. And you spend a lot of time mm-hmm. in that hallway. And I think that there's so much, I feel like, that we can talk about how that's expanded even with just, you know, that definition is my thought.
Right. So I love that. I think that's one of the most powerful summaries of the experience. And like that brings so much to life for me. And it brings so much to life for me as a non-TCK, right? As a parent of TCKs, which is the premise for this whole podcast, right? Like that's where we started right. was, hey, you've got this experience, I've got this experience. What if we started talking about this? And I think it gives me so much understanding, and so it like the hallway just makes sense. And so bringing all of that together, like the definition and the imagery, like would you say that for you personally, in your experience, like do you feel most comfortable in the hallway? People who are also walking through the hallway on their way between different rooms, some of them the same rooms as you, some of them different rooms from you, right?
Yeah.
Is that your sweet spot? Is that your safety zone or your comfort zone?
Yeah, I would say for me it is. And I, you know, Jerry, I can remember the first time I kind of heard about TCKs. I tell this story a lot in some of my presentations. I think I was, I think I might have even still been in college, but I was working mm-hmm. with an organization, and I think we brought in a TCK speaker, because it's always a good idea to bring in a speaker, Jerry.
Absolutely.
And so we brought in a speaker. I don't remember who they were, but they kind of talked about, they focused on the challenges of being a TCK, but it's the first time mm-hmm. I'd heard the term mm-hmm. and I'd heard mm-hmm. all this stuff, and it was very relatable. But it was all the challenges. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, I do relate. Oh, yeah, I do that. Oh, I do that. Mm-hmm. It was super uncomfortable because I'd never had anyone put into words so accurately things that I thought were just an internal me thing. And it was almost disconcerting to have a PowerPoint about what I thought was just inside of me. And so mm-hmm. I remember there's a degree of comfort to be like, oh, there's more than just me out there. But also a huge degree of discomfort to go, wow. This sounds like a disease. We have so many problems. Like I'm just suffering from terminal TCK and I'm doomed. And I do remember one of the things that this presenter said was just that, you know, and TCKs, they tend to have, you know, a lot in common with other people who, you know, are also in the hallway. They tend to find each other kind of thing. Mm-hmm, and I mm-hmm. thought, that's ridiculous. I don't even know other TCKs. I don't seek them out. And I remember I was so uncomfortable that I moved during this presentation because I was so worried that at any moment she was going to kind of say, you know, is there any TCK in the room? And if I raise my hand, everyone would go, there's one now. Get him. And I thought, oh, no. So I wanted to sit by an exit so I could make a run for it. And I did. I found a table at the back with a bunch of people who in this organization, and I'd worked with them. And I thought, yeah, these people are least likely to grab a pitchfork and come after me. I sat there, and then she said this after the break, you know, she said, they tend to find each other. And I thought, that's ridiculous. And then she did just what I was fearing. She said, are there any TCKs in the room now? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to raise mm-hmm. my hand because, you know, I didn't want them to come after me. But then no one raised their hand. And I thought, this poor person, like they've, you know, prepared a whole PowerPoint. Like they deserve something. So I did. I raised my hand and I was ready for everyone to stare. And Jerry, I kid you not, I looked around, and by the time after I raised my hand, the only seven other people in that room of about 120 to raise their hands were all sitting at my table. Like we had all, without even knowing it, we'd all found each other.
Just gravitated towards each other.
And we felt most comfy with each other.
And you didn't know each other before that?
We'd met each other, but it just never come up. Like,
but you just kind of fell together. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I remember I was annoyed. I was like, oh my gosh, look, we're so predictable people. This uh-huh. makes us vulnerable. They know everything about us now. Everyone scatter, scatter, scatter. serpentine for survival. But it was, so I really do think there's that in-between space is familiar, to find other people who know what it's like to be in between.
Yeah. Wow. That's so good. So let me give you some of my experience. First time I ever heard about TCKs, what it was. It was a mind-blowing experience. It was at some training that we went to before moving abroad. And it was, of course, like, we had never considered these things before. We'd never considered, like, what it would be like for our kids. We just knew that it would be challenging, or it would be exciting, or it would be adventurous, or it would be difficult. But we had all these stereotypes in our head. And so to hear this person kind of unpack, hey, people have actually thought about this, and they've discovered some things about this, and here they are. So, like, it was eye-opening and beautiful and wonderful. And it was also really, really painful. And it sparked in me just kind of that thought. And I think in my experience, and even in my own work, I've swung the pendulum maybe too far the other way. But at times it feels like when you give parents like me, who are about to move abroad, right? We're about to take our kids into this, what we've expected to be a wild and amazing adventure, because that's how it was sold to us, right? And we're about to do that. And then all of a sudden you give us a pro and con list of what it is to be a TCK. And the pros are, hey, they're going to learn new languages. They're going to engage in new cultures. They're going to meet people from all over the world. They're going to travel. And there's going to be, like, what are some of the other pros? What are the typical pros?
They're going to have great cross-cultural skills. They're going to be highly adaptable. They're going to have this extensive relationship bank.
Yep.
They're going to make friends. They're going to have so much practice at relationships. Yeah, there are so many good strengths that come with it.
So many positives. And then they present the con list, which is always on the PowerPoint, is always equal. Like, they're the same number of pros as there are cons, because it looks good on the PowerPoint slide. You don't want to have too many on one side. So it's like, if you come up with a pro, you've got to come up with a con. And the cons are, you know, saying a lot of goodbyes and challenges, like the transience and the all of those cons. There it is. Yeah. Rootlessness and restlessness, right? My kid is going to feel rootless, like they don't belong anywhere, right? They're going to feel restless. And it's, to me, like, this is the imagery that I've always used, is like, imagine you're applying for a job, right? And the job description is, hey, great pay, good benefits, flexible hours, and a family-like atmosphere. You've got four, right? And then on the con side, there is need to work some weekends. Working some overtime, one other one, and then must have a face tattoo of the company logo, right? this is the reality. When you've got pros and cons, like, they carry weight, and they carry weight based on what's important to you. And I don't want any face tattoo, but especially of my company logo, right? So it's weighted, and that's a deal breaker for me. That scares me. But the challenge is, when you're teaching me about TCKs, I've already signed up. I'm already excited. I've bought the airplane ticket. I'm ready to go. And you just told me that what I'm signing on for is to doom my kids to rootlessness and restlessness. And it's really scary. And so I'm curious. This is going back to basics. The first time we ever heard you a TCK, me a parent of TCKs, like, how do you talk to parents? How would you, let's go back years, right? And pretend like that, because it probably was like you experienced it as a, however old you were, 4 years old at that time. And I was 65, getting ready to move abroad for the first time. That's the age difference, just for our listeners who are wondering.
Jerry, you look so good for your age.
61 years difference. But let's go back to that moment when we both heard about it. How would you, knowing what you know now, how would you talk to me And set me up for reality, for like level my expectations, blow my mind with this mind-blowing concept, help me to understand my kids more, but also not let me leave that meeting feeling like I'm doing the worst thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Oh man, there's so much there. And this, honestly, we're getting, I like that we're doing back to basics, because we're getting back to the basics of why I even chose to do what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, first and foremost, I have to often tell parents that they have to remember the reality that nobody gets to choose their upbringing. Nobody. And so not growing up as a TCK was not a choice. It was forced upon you. In fact, this became apparent to me when, I mean, I've met several friends who they're super jealous of my upbringing. They're like, I would have benefited so much if I got to move around and see the world like you did, but I didn't. Like, my parents decided that we were going to live in a small cornfield and that's how I would grow up. Mm-hmm. And I never got to get out, and they're mad about it. And you'll find TCKs who are mad and saying, you know, I wish I could have just stayed in one place. And what's important to remember is that nobody gets to choose. Nobody gets asked. So these parents, I think you run across a lot of parents who do, they feel a sense of guilt. They're like, what am I doing to my child? But the reality is nobody was given a choice. Like, you've decided that your children are going to be raised as TCKs, and they don't get a say in it. Well, you know what? Your parents decided you would be raised not as a TCK.
In a cornfield, right?
No choice in it. You know, nobody gets to choose. We just have to do what we can with the hand we're dealt. So I think there's that. And I think it's helpful to understand that the TCK experience is a culture with strengths and weaknesses. And the reality is all cultures have them. I mean, if you grow up in a small town, there are strengths that'll come from that and challenges that'll come from that. If you grow up in a big city, strengths that come from that, challenges that come from that. You know, if you grow up in a super affluent area, strengths and challenges. In a super impoverished area, strengths and challenges. So being a TCK is just a different mix of strengths and challenges. You cannot protect your kids from strengths and challenges. Those are universal. The TCK experience, you know, it takes different language to understand it. And that's why I think it stands out. But it's no different than any other way to grow up, in that everything comes with strengths and challenges. So I think there's an element of guilt there that I think may be unwarranted, because no one gets to choose how they grow up. That is not just TCKs, that's everybody. So I think that's a really important thing. I think another thing is, and this is what's really exciting to me, is to realize that the TCK experience, it may be more extreme, but there's a lot in there that actually I think is common to everybody. And finding those points of commonality is actually really, really helpful. I mean, if you think about it, Jerry, you know, look at the TCK definition that I so eloquently delivered from memory.
Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you. And then look at the hallway illustration. You could actually apply that, granted with less force, but still applicable to everybody. I mean, if you think about it, even if you live in what we would consider a monocultural existence, you probably have a separate room for how you behave with your family, a separate room for how you behave when you're out with your friends, and a separate room for how you behave at work. And you don't just jam those all together. Like, if you started treating, you know, your professional colleagues the way you do your family, you know, you can't yell at your boss, I'm sick of you, go to your room. That's not okay. So even in a monocultural situation, we all have different rooms that we divide our lives into. And we do spend a lot of time in between. We spend a lot of time where our sort of conscious decision-making is that in between, that I am the same person. I'm the hallway that links these rooms. And I may act this way with my family, this way with my friends, and this way at work, but it's still me, the consistency, the hallway that connects them. So the TCK experience may be elevated and, you know, a more amplified example, but in all honesty, those roots are in all of us. And I think that is, you know, as we talk about the basics and how they've changed, I think that understanding is really important, because I think everyone's getting more amplified. So I think now everyone has to interact far more interculturally. Now we're all exposed to more cultures, but we all have the roots of that hallway illustration. Everybody does. There's nobody just lives in one room. I think that's a fallacy. Yeah, that, we all have that, to interact differently.
Like that sparks a question in me because I like that. That's such a clear picture because I can see in your experience and in your life, my experience is kind of it's almost like a dainty little miniature version of that. Like my hallway is much different than your hallway. But I do like that.
It's still a hallway.
Well, like the rooms that I went through, there was my school. Like I went to the school room and then I went to my home room. Right. And I went to my church room and there was very limited rooms. They weren't speaking different languages. There weren't multiple cultures and there weren't different types of food. Like it was all the same stuff, the same elements in every room. But like I don't know how old before I realized that the room that I was going to when I went home was not the same room that everyone was going to. Like I had no concept until I was much older that kids that I was in school with, just by like default number, like statistically speaking, some of those kids were going home to abusive homes, right? Like they were going home to, there was all the full range of drug abuse and alcoholism and physical abuse and sexual abuse and all of that, right? Like people that I sat in my school room with every single day, sat next to, built relationships with, really grew as intimately as you can at that age and at that stage of your life. Right. But they were going through the hallway to a very, very different room and their experience was much different than mine. So it sparks in me the question, like, when did you realize as a TCK that not everyone was a TCK?
Oh, man, that's such a good question. I guess there was, it's funny because there are things that this makes me think of. You know, the reason we're doing this episode, I always come back to the idea that one of the best things we can do in life is learn to process intellectually what you do intuitively. And I think so much of even the TCK definition is just that, is processing intellectually what you do intuitively. And for other people, you know, the idea of that hallway illustration has always been there intuitively. Like we all intuitively figure out, yeah, I have to act different at school and at home and around family, whatever.
Right, right.
But when everyone around you is doing the same thing, there's not a whole lot of need to move that intuition externally because everyone's got the same intuition on it, roughly. For TCKs, I think it's important because that's where the disconnect is that intuition, the degree to which it has to operate is different. So intuitively, I think I knew from a pretty early age, like I remember hanging out with local school kids who... Yeah, I mean, I went to local national schools as well as military kind of international schools. And I remember even hanging out with, you know, local school kids realizing, you know, and I don't think it was conscious, but realizing, you know, they talk about, even as kids, even in primary or elementary school, they talk about and dream about their future based on this locale and these set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And maybe they have big dreams about, you know, someday I'll move to... But that's different. Whereas it wasn't a dream for me. The reality was, I know I'm only here for a little while. So when I dream of the future, it's disconnected from this physical place. Like I already know that I see something as temporary that you see as more permanent. So intuitively, I think I was aware of that pretty early. But it wasn't until much later that I had the language to be able to externalize that. And that language is so powerful. And I think that's, you know, you mentioned something, you know, in just you and I talking before about how we assign a lot of value to definitions and how, you know, how we, the definitions we use, I think are changing a lot nowadays. And definitions are powerful. And I think there's something to be said for being able to intellectually with words process the experience that my experience is different than yours. And that's helpful. It's helpful because it can be dissected both ways. You can still find the points of commonality. And I do. I still say TCKs have way more in common than we sometimes think with everybody else. We all are people of the hallway. TCKs, it is. It's just a more extreme example. But there are things that come, unique things that come with that extreme. But it does mean there are still some familiar roots. And that's important too. The balance of that, the balance of what makes you unique and what keeps you connected. I mean, that's the human story, is we're constantly all balancing. How are we connected and how are we unique? And and that's a dynamic balance. You know, it's useful in different ways. We zoom out, we've got everything in common. We're 7 or 8 billion people on the planet. You zoom in and there's no one quite like you. And there's thousands of stops in between those two extremes. So yeah, for me, I probably knew intuitively pretty young, but it took me a while to be able to process that, intellectually.
Yeah. The fact that you just stumbled a little bit between billions, I think speaks volumes into the reality of where we are, like right now, at this current moment in history, right? Because it wasn't that long ago that we passed 7 billion, and
I think that was 2011.
Was it 2011? Like it was very recent.
Yeah.
We passed 7 billion. And then was it 2022 or 20? Was it just like last month? I don't know. We passed 8 billion. And
which is crazy.
Like if you pause to think about it, and if you look at the charts and the numbers and the history of the world, right? Like that is such rapid change. Such massive difference. And with that has to come massive cultural difference, right? Like things are changing so rapidly. And I think that's the reality that we live in 2023. Did I get that right? Is that the year we're in? Yep.
I think
so. In 2023, like we're looking at that reality, and culture is changing so fast, not just a local culture, but global culture more so than ever is changing so rapidly. And then we have experiences like COVID, which is this zoom out. We all have the same experience. Everybody's like coughing and sneezing and got a fever, and zoom in. And the reality of that experience is much, much, much different. And our reaction to that experience, like COVID hit much harder in some places than it did in others, and other places reacted much harder to it than other places. But that we live in it's a breakneck world right now. Like it is, everything is changing so fast. So what's we're going back to the basics, which aren't that old when you talk about TCK stuff, right? Like we've been talking about it for a little bit, for, you know, a couple decades, but really like in historical timeline figures, it's not that long that we've been talking about this. But what's changed? What's changed for you in the way that you approach it as a professional speaking to people around the world, and making me jealous with every flight? but you're speaking around the world to people about what this means, and really, like, you introduce the basics to a lot of people, right? Like that's part of what you do. What do you feel is changing about the conversation and about the topic itself?
Oh man. Well, I think, several things come to mind. First of all, that I do genuinely think, you know, that I always quote, Ted Ward was a sociologist in the 1980s, and he's often attributed,
one of my favorite quotes.
That TCKs are the prototype citizens of the future. And the reality is, I think he's right, and I think that future's now. I think
he was right.
Yeah.
Right. Like. Yeah. And here we are. Like we're in the future.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is just it.
Or at least we're very, very close.
Yeah, and that's just it. The skills TCKs have by their lifestyle, everybody is going to need, because change is happening rapidly, and cross-cultural understanding is less and less sort of this optimal icing on the cake and more a key ingredient if you're going to have anything. That's just the reality of, like you said, of the breakneck change and the connectedness and the globalization, all that kind of stuff. So I think for one thing, you know, the explaining these basics to people, I think more and more is transforming from a, hey, like when I talk to parents, it's less and less a, hey, this is a unique thing your kids are going through, and more a, hey, this is a unique thing your kids are going through, but it's actually less unique than you think. And if you really start to think about it, you and the rest of the world are really going through, even if it's a less amplified version, the same kind of thing. Like, this experience is happening to everyone, maybe a little bit faster to them, but everyone's catching up. And so I think I think there is, and I love that, again, that phrase from the great RVR, the great Ruth Van Rieken, who says that that whole widening of the tent. I think we can see that happening, you know. And another thing that I think has changed is like you've mentioned, the importance of definition. There are now so many different ways. In fact, people get into arguments and fights over it now. About whether is TCK still a good term to use? Should we just say global nomads? Should we say cross-cultural, transcultural? There's a lot more that's gone into the language, and I'm all for language. I don't think we should fight about it, but I think it's helpful. I mean, I think, you know, the way I think it's helpful to understand it now is that, you know, TCK's third culture kids are a subset of CCK's cross-cultural kids. I think that there's third culture adults. I think there's adult third culture kids. I think the experience of growing up as a TCK and becoming an adult has a lot in common with, but is still different from, an adult who grew up in kind of a monocultural setting and then chose to become cross-cultural. There's similarities, but still some differences. I think the idea of incorporating TCKs under the umbrella of CCKs, of cross-cultural kids, I think that's wise, because that encompasses, I mean, cross-cultural is very wide. You know, that's everything from multiracial to, that's all kinds of things. And I think, but I'm actually a defender of the term third culture kid, because I think it incorporates what makes a third culture kid distinct, in my mind, from a cross-cultural kid or a transnational or a transcultural, is the idea of some degree of transience. I think what's, you know, a CCK plus transience equals a TCK. That there are a lot of, you know, if you're the child of an immigrant, you know, you're a cross-cultural kid, and it can be a lot to deal with. You know, maybe your parents don't speak the language of the place they emigrated to, and you as a kid have been in, you know, this country and whichever country that is, and you have learned the language. So you're dealing with one language at home, one language, you know, that everybody else around you speaks. And like, there's a lot of similarities, but the difference is, for a CCK, there's less transience. I've settled it. Like, this is my new normal. Whereas for a third culture kid, there's that element of transience. There's that element of every stage is temporary. So, and that approaches, you makes you approach life different. If, you know, an immigrant will likely try to assimilate into what's around them, and there are unique challenges with that. They have to balance out, you know, how do you preserve the culture that you came with and incorporate the culture around, and how do you balance that? That's a unique set of challenges, but it is different. And it's why I still appreciate the difference in nomenclature for a third culture kid, is the idea that it's still temporary, that you are going to bring culture with you. You are working with a culture around you, but it's probably going to change again in a little while. So I think, I still support a separate term for third culture kids, because I think that addition of transience is really, really important. And they share something in common with cross-cultural and transcultural. But that addition of transience, that has some unique factors that I think are worth considering. So I do. I think the definitions have changed. Like I said, to kind of broaden that, we now talk about global nomads and things. I mean, we do. We have loads of digital nomads now who, you know, we're able to work in other countries just because we want to. Mm-hmm. And so they're experiencing multicultural living. And
it's a weird world right now.
It's a weird world.
It just absolutely is.
It's a weird world.
It's exciting. Yeah. It's, there's so much to it. There is access like we've never experienced before, but I feel like we don't recognize it as access, right? Like we don't recognize how astronomically unique it is that we have access to the things that we have. Like even the fact that we can hop on a plane and be on the other side of the world, right? Like that has, it's lost all of its beauty, right? Because we're so accustomed to it. Maybe I'm saying this because I did that last just a couple of weeks ago, right? For the first time in 2 years. And it was such a part of my experience. It was such a part of my life for so long. And now it's been 2 years since that has happened. And I was very aware on that airplane. I went to Asia last, a couple of weeks ago. And it was very exciting. And it was just, I was overwhelmed by the idea. And it kind of reinstilled that awe and that beauty in me, right? And I think we've, in so many ways, we have access to so many things, both digitally and like in real face-to-face experience that the world has never had before. And we've kind of lost our sense of awe in that. And I'm all for reinstilling that wonder and that awe of
there is just there's, like there's
let's don't live in this in 2023. Like, let's don't live in this time in the world and have access to all of the things and just like be a part of so many advancements and in like incredible experiences and not recognize it, right? Like, not see it. I think it would be, the tragedy would be to miss it.
I agree. And I think we do. We tend to normalize, and it takes some discipline not to over normalize. And I think one of the dangers of that normalizing, of kind of losing the wonder, is also you lose the reality that it's not universally applied. I mean, I am painfully aware when I, you know, enter some countries that for the most part, I hold passports in countries that make it very easy for me to travel. My passports allow me pretty easy entry. That is not universal. I mean, I stand in a shorter line than people from other nations sometimes. You know, I can enter countries and I get to follow a little sign that says, if you have a passport from these countries, just go through the e-gates, just scan your way in. Right. You don't even have to talk to a person. Whereas if you look at the amount of countries on that sign, you know, I just did it. You know, you can enter. I mean, I did. I just entered Singapore and there's a big old sign. And if you're one of the dozen countries on that sign, you can just scan your way in. If you're one of, and there are, you know, almost 200 nations. So really that means a small percentage get to, and that's an extreme example.
Yeah, like 90%, right? Pretty close to 90%.
But it's at
least the countries in the world, and probably the population of the world can't travel like you can travel because you have
absolutely
those passports.
Which is all the more reason not to take it for granted. You know, some of us benefit from absolutely astounding access. But it's definitely not universal. I mean, we talk about the idea of, you know, privilege. And I think that comes into the power of definition and everything as well. And I think that's something, you know, that has changed too, is I think it's a healthy change to broaden the perspective and kind of think about, you know, the classic view of third culture kids. We tend to picture basically expats who came from countries who could afford to. And the reality is that nowadays access is growing. And some of us are still ridiculously privileged with our access, but that access is growing. And so there's more and more people, who are able to travel and relocate and live transiently. And some always have, but we've kind of put them in a different category. You know, the TCKs, the stereotype is, you know, they go to a rich international school, they get to fly around, and that's not always the case. There are loads of people that fit the TCK definition that actually absolutely can't afford, you know, the big international schools, but they're still having cross-cultural experiences with transients, and they're part of the conversation, and well, they should be. You know, I mean, even CCKs, you know, it's worth pointing out that broader field contains, you know, refugees. There's a load of expansion that's happened. Mm-hmm. And I think the more of those stories we add to the experience, that adds to the richness. So I think, you know, to answer your question, as far as what's changed, that expansion, I think, has changed a lot. We can gather so many more perspectives now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we have access. That's one of the access points that we have that we didn't have before. If we have access to the stories of people everywhere in the world like we didn't before, right? Like when I was growing up, it was National Geographic gave you these access points to what it was like to grow up in the world, right? To grow up all over the
place.
I'm
so jealous. National Geographic, they get to all the places I can't still. And I'm, right? I'm infinitely right? jealous. I will beat them. Yeah. I will beat you, come National on. Geographic.
Wow, you heard it here first. Chris O'Shaughnessy just claimed
they're not going to sponsor us either
to beat National Geographic.
We're losing potential sponsors by the episode.
But that idea, like we have so much access to the stories of people around the world right now, like through the thousands of digital venues and like kids growing up know more about what it was like, what it's like to grow up around the world than I did growing up. It's a whole other podcast. I don't think we can even begin to scratch the surface on TCKs and privilege, which you started. I'll take it back. You just scratched the surface, right?
I did. I dipped my toes.
We'll consider that surface scratched, but it's a huge conversation that I never thought about as in my time abroad, but recognizing how much access my kids had to things that so many kids around the world don't have access to, and just the fact that they were living outside of their parents' passport culture really was a privilege that so many people in the world could never even fathom or dream of. For me, it was a privilege. For me growing up, it was the thought of doing it was so outside of my scope that I couldn't even imagine it. But it wasn't access that I could never have. Like, it wasn't outside of reach. In fact, my father was once, when I was fairly young, I must have been 9 or 10, was offered a job in Brazil. So it was like that deciding moment. I could have been a TCK. Like, I was on the edge, and I wanted, when I found out about it, I was like, are you kidding me? Why did it? And he was just thinking, hey, like, I've got a daughter who's getting, she's coming up dating age. She's going to get married. He had no concept of what it was like to live in a different country. It was just a, like, do we want to pick up everything and move to a different country for a few years? Or do we want to just do what we've always planned to do and raise our kids here and keep them in the same school and same church, same place, in this culture that we're comfortable with? Yeah, we choose that. And I was so upset when I discovered that, even at that young age, because to me, Brazil sounded amazing. But to them, I get it, right? Like, sure. But I get why they made that decision. But it wasn't for me that, like, it wasn't a privilege that I could have never had. It was a privilege that I didn't experience, right? But for so much of the world, it's a privilege that is just really genuinely out of reach. Like, it can't happen based on their current realities. I think that's another podcast and a great conversation. I'm looking forward to that.
It is. That is a whole other conversation. But, but I do. I think I like that we've unpacked the basics, because I think I think they've stood the test of time. I deeply appreciate that the concept continues to grow. I love the fact that the tent is growing. I love being able to find the points of commonality. I love that, you know, everyone has a hallway, TCK or otherwise.
Right.
I love that the challenges the world faces, we've thankfully had a little preview with TCKs, and the strengths the world needs, we've had a little preview with TCKs. And I think the definitions, they're going to continue to change and evolve and grow. And that's a great thing.
It is. Yeah. As they should.
I'm on board. This has been, what a great unpacking. What a great unpacking of the basics.
Oh, yeah. I love it when we unpack things. And the imagery in my head, there is, now we've just got stuff pulled out of the suitcase and laying all over the floor.
We do. There's a load more to unpack. We've made a little bit of a mess, but at least it's we out. Don't, at least it's out.
Yeah. We unpack the world. We don't put anything away, right? Like, we just...
No, we're a mess.
We unpack it, put it on the floor. It's up to you to put it away.
Yeah. that go, oh, look at that. And there is. I think there's going to be, there's so much to offshoot from here. You know, there's, right. We didn't even get into, and we don't have the time today, but, you know, and I think a whole other episode would just be, I'll just put a teaser out there now, Jerry, just a little teaser. But one of the most common things I find now when I'm speaking at places is the interest in the adult experience. You know, I may go into places talking about third culture kids, but a load of the parents are like, sure. That's great. This is super helpful. But actually I'm feeling a lot of this and some different things.
Yeah.
And so I think that experience has grown a ton. There's so many more third culture adults, and there's some similarities, but there are some differences. And I mean, that I think has expanded greatly. We might have to do an entire unpacking of the adult, the third culture adult phenomenon, and the differences between a third culture adult and an adult third culture kid. You know, compare and contrast those. Ooh, so many episodes.
Oh, man.
Nuggets just waiting to
Let's
be
unpack it. Let's unpack it on site somewhere in the world. Let's you and me get together.
I love this plan.
Just let's unpack it and leave a mess for everyone else to clean up. That's our that's our goal.
Diesel and Clooney making a mess. That's a good tagline.
Rename the podcast. That's good.
Oh, dear listener, thanks for joining us as we unpack and throw things all over the mental floor. Thanks for being willing to step around the mess we've made. We hope you found some articles that we dragged.
Or step in it. Like, let's don't assume that anyone's stepping around anything.
No, feel free. Step in. Play with these concepts. We dare you. Yep. We dare
enjoy,
you.
Enjoy scraping this off of your shoes.
Enjoy scraping this off really of your shoes. Mm-hmm. And good luck, dear listener, with your next flight boarding. I hope that it's miraculously organized for inexplicable reasons, because it's just not naturally going to happen. But I hope that by some supernatural force, you somehow get to board a flight in an organized fashion. That is our wish for you, dear listener. Join us again next time.